me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest.
Dave Monk and Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial. And
Dave on the board, and this is February the 5th, 2017, and this is the Prairie Monk Show, our weekly look at here at WEFT at the environment conservation efforts. We talk about bicycling once in a while, and whatever else has been happening around here in the week, including, I can see, whatever Dave has been reading this week.
So, I came in to prepare for this program, and there were a group of singers. And so we'll have William Jones on a little later, just to remind us that getting together is very helpful in some of these things that we're dealing with at the moment. I am kind of appalled at the amount of biodiversity that we are taking out of this universe very, very quickly. Humans are really overstocking the earth. If you had a cattle ranch, you would not be overstocking the universe to this point. We have to think about how many people do we want, how do they balance out with the ecosystem, and how do we preserve those creatures that are more gentle and are in niches that are vulnerable. The cockroaches will remain. They have been there for millennia, and there are other creatures who take advantage of the disturbance that we create. But last week we were talking about prairie burns, and if you eliminate the burning of prairie throughout the Great Plains, then that is a very disturbing experience. So last week we talked about that. We talked about huge fires. We talked about the Indian involvement. It's obvious that electrical fires created by lightning were present and probably initiated the human involvement in burning. But humans, especially Indians, were really good at figuring out how to handle fire, how to burn in a patchwork manner so that you had a mosaic of experiences so that you didn't exactly burn everything to a blackness so that the buffalo did not have any food over winter, for instance, or so that you eliminate certain species. we've lost most of that to farming that is in squares that don't obey contour lines, don't obey the terrain, and we have to think about that. This morning I was listening to two disturbing events. One is that the recent establishment of Bears Ears as a national monument is getting opposition from people who want to use it. And there are going to be some people who lose out, and especially it may be the whole ecosystem if we lose that sort of area. Teddy Roosevelt was very, very helpful in going out and looking at some of those territories like Yellowstone as ideal places where people want to relax and understand the environment as it was. And indeed, millions of people are visiting those sites, which tend to get smaller because the towns do very well nearby. There are people who sit outside the national park level areas and take advantage of that point. But gradually, the National Park Service and others that really invited people into these places with roads early on changed their style so that we didn't get a cafeteria of people sitting on top of a waterfall or some wonderful place. So Bears Ears is in jeopardy with a change in administration. So we have to watch it. But then there's a move afoot at the congressional level to sell 3 million acres of ground for use, and that's done on the principle of we can do it better than the native landscaping, the native creatures, but it's tremendously interesting to follow those native creatures, to sort them out and find out what they do, how they adapt, and how they survive. And you don't survive by manifest destiny if you put everything into agriculture. You have to think perhaps that livestock, including buffalo, but also the bred cattle that are on ranches, are very expensive in terms of water and energy and food. So the productivity per unit of food is great. So it may be that we have to think more about the type of food that we eat, more vegetables, less beef, and less milk, and gradually allow those ecosystems that are there in places where they can preserve themselves because they're on a terrain that cannot be cultivated, and they're in places where there may be other variants that stop agriculture from proceeding. There was a gentleman named Malthus some years ago, around the turn of the century, who wanted to predict that there's not a limited amount of food. And that was negated to some extent because you went from a horse era to tractors. The technology changed. You found fertilizer. It would allow monocrops to grow. You had other technologies involving veterinary work and disease control. And so we have been able to produce more food than we even need. We have food that we can export, and that increases the gross national product. And people only regard progress as an increase in gross national product. In order to do that, you have to have an increase in the number of people that you can sell your item to. And that's rather cruel. If you're going to do sustainable things, you may have to think about not improving the gross national product each year, but think about improving the gross national environment, the well health of people, the interaction between people. And I think education is important, but for some countries that do not have food, then education is not the answer, because just it's too sophisticated for the understanding at that level, and that level produces a lot of young folk. And if you go into food, you're going to increase the population exponentially very quickly. But in the long run, you hope that that will cool down, so we don't have to have people moving from Africa through the Mediterranean into Europe. It's just overwhelming for people who have been located without necessarily thinking broadly about their environment. So last week, we were talking about fires and what they did and how you can actually, even though you're in nice little squares, you can mosaic burn so that you don't take out all the creatures, including the microorganisms that are tremendously important. One spoonful of native soil can contain millions of organisms. There are insects, there are birds, there are small mammals, there are large mammals. How do we work with these creatures is a big question. So a lot of it comes back to the local level. If you understand your particular ecosystem, then that is important. And it's amazing how often that starts with a song or a dance or a bicycle or someone picking seeds. So I have one book here that I picked up, but the Neil Smith Center, it's near to Colfax, Iowa, near to Route 80. It's thousands of acres of ground, enough to support at least a herd of buffalo. It was agricultural land, destined to be a power plant, I think, but it reverted to a prairie. And so we're talking to some extent about Iowa. Iowa is different from Illinois. Iowa does not have a Shawnee forest. Most of their ecosystem is prairie. They do not have a Chicago that has power and the capacity to preserve a lot of prairies. It's amazing, if you go to Chicago, there are railroad right-of-way prairies. A lot of prairies have been preserved, and there is a power base in Chicago, which is a very large city, and as a result has energy. And one I finished off with last week and just mentioned in passing was a book called Restoring Tall Grass Prairie by Shirley Shirley. And you can remember that because it's an unusual name. It might be a nom de plume, but I don't think so. This is a woman that got hooked up in prairie because she was asked to help pick seed, prairie seed. And she got involved, and she then started to realize that there were many, many different creatures, at least 100, perhaps even more than that if you have a terrain like the Ozarks. You have lust to the northwest of places like Iowa, but into Nebraska. There is a range. So she gradually worked out that these species have niches where they've adapted to fire and water and soils and glaciation over at least 10,000 years. And so for her, it was fun to find these creatures in their location. And she sketched them. She's a nurse, so she's not someone who has a lot of background. And so I'm having going to change my direction at the moment. I'll come back to that book in a moment. But we have William Jones here, and we've just had a singing group at WEFT, and this is where you get involved with local action. So William's going to tell us a little bit about this, and he's brought your name?
I'm Lindsay.
Lindsay, okay. So let's say a little bit about local action and how you fit. Do you come from this community? Yes. How do you fit? And,
So I grew up in Rantoul, Illinois.
Oh, and we have a nice little prairie just north of Rantoul that you might know about.
I have heard about it, and actually part of the reason why I came home is to be a part of caring for the land. So I moved home to build a permaculture garden at the halfway house there in Rantoul, as I'm starting to understand that to build peace on earth, we have to build peace with the physical world as well. I'm actually reading.
So where did you go to? Where did you escape to? And where did you come back from?
I escaped to the far distant metropolis of St. Louis, Missouri, which taught me so many things about social justice and lots of things that living as a, middle-class white girl in Rantoul didn't teach me. I got to be educated by the beautiful city of St. Louis.
Are you an Air Force brat?
I am not an Air Force brat. My father studied law here and then did his clerkship in Rantoul and is a very loyal fellow. So he just stuck around and he bought this firm and he's there to this day.
You have skills in a degree program or is it?
I trained as a painter here in Champaign-Urbana. Oh, okay. And so I did a lot of community activism through my work as an artist in St. Louis. And then that work led me to continue asking what is it that causes us to heal as people? And that work, that question led me to my own yoga practice and to study yoga and to teach yoga. And that work led me to study how we heal with the earth. So I started studying permaculture. So the inquiry that I'm living in right now is how do we build restorative culture in our relationships with ourselves, in our relationship with the land that we live on, and in our communities?
Yes, well, just to remind you that Rantoul has a wonderful prairie. The only places where there's any prairie left is on the railroad line because that couldn't be invaded for corn and soybeans or cattle or whatever. Mm. So just if you go 1 mile north of Rantoul, the present 45 runs out around the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And then there's an old Route 45, which is concrete. It goes all the way to Paxton.
Yes, I have biked that road.
So we would love to have that as a national park for prairie, so that you come off at Kankakee and you come down the right of way. And when you get to Paxton, you can actually find a cemetery prairie. You can go to Loder. It's got a cemetery prairie. Mm-hmm. These are areas that were put aside for future burials that have grown their native species. Mm. And if they're not mown, then we have them. Mm. So we need to enlist people like yourself to look at that face of the Bloomington Moraine with dry, loose on the top of the hill and mesic, partially damp on the face of the moraine. And then at the bottom you have an outwash plain. There's an acreage on the Rantoul side of the cemetery, Maplewood Cemetery. And it's swampy. It doesn't grow crops, but it's very like the outwashed plain that you got in Flatville, which became very, very rich soil. That's where the Drummers and the Flanagans are, and they're rich soils.
Mm. Thank you so much for tending that earth.
So tell me a little bit more about what you do. How did you get to be vocal? And are you trained in
singing? Oh, not at all. No training, just a lot of love. So I grew up singing in church, and it was a really important part of my life. My mom was our church pianist, and she would just like freestyle sing her heart song at night. And so the lullaby that I grew up with was her just loving through voice and kind of freestyling on the piano. And so that was in me, chording and chord structures and harmonies. It was just a natural way that was around our home. And in my 20s, I moved away from the religion that I was brought up with and didn't do a lot of singing. I did some singing in like collaborations and, you know, more art sort of basement show scene, but I didn't come back to community singing until recently. And the movement is growing so strong all over the world right now. There's gatherings called Singing Alive in the Cascadia bioregion and Appalachia and Hawaii and Costa Rica. And they spawned and inspired a Midwestern festival that's called Village Fire that I've been a part of for the last 3 years.
Yes.
And it's in Iowa in the Driftless region. And it's community singing. We sing songs to the earth. We sing African songs. We sing civil rights songs. We sing simple songs, a lot of songs we make up. It's mantra to anchor our minds and our hearts in a place that we want to live from, in a place of creation.
So you've been to the Driftless area.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's very sandy and a different environment than you get if you're down near Des Moines or Prairie City, where there's huge area of restoration prairies. Mm. Neil Smith, it's just off Route 80. You can get off at Colfax or something like that. And it's large enough to have a herd of buffalo. Can you sing us a little bit of your mother's lullaby?
I want to sing you a lullaby to the earth is actually the song that's rising up for me to sing.
Okay.
My mom would just be freestyling, and I still feel a little nervous to do that on the way. but I want to teach you one of my favorite healing mantras for the earth. And this comes from my yoga teacher, Grace Jewell, who does really beautiful work pairing yoga teachers with farmers to bring people to have healing retreats on their land. So as a way of supporting farmers to increase their...
Yes, we want to encourage them to have a contour set aside for prairies so that they don't lose all their bacteria and fungi.
Yes. So we'll sing this song on the edge of the farmland. And, you know, I really like to run in the country, and I really like to bike in the country. My dream this summer is to bike across the prairie and be singing the songs to our land and envisioning healed land where it's not...
Sadly, we just lost an elevator at Thomasboro where we bicyclists used to meet because it was an icon on the prairie. It was a wooden elevator, and the Interurban used to come up and service it. It was not a mainline elevator. It's the sort of elevator you could put your arms around and hug. And so, yes, I can imagine you being at that corner and shouting to the world at last. So sing a little.
Yeah, so this is a sweet song you can sing to. You can sing to your body as your homeland. You can sing to your earth
These
as
people
your
land. Were barefooted and they moved their bodies. Mm-hmm. And that too was interesting.
Yeah.
And to bring in William here, this goes back to some of his territory was the honeytuts and people in the North End community that know how to sing, and it's almost political. So, do you have any comment to make on that?
No, I'm not a singer. Family
he's
members
not a
that
singer, but if he's running his program before, sometimes he's here dancing and singing in the top of his voice. I can hear it up the street. So, but he's encouraged these people. So, okay, let's hear your...
So this is also a stacking song. Is anybody inspired to hold a part, or do you want me to sing both on my own? Okay.
Stacking.
So is any...
Singing along.
Does anybody want to sing along? Okay. 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 Well, I'll sing it once through, and we'll see how brave my fellows here are. So this song goes like this. Oh, pure land, sweet pure land. Oh, pure land, sweet pure land. My heaven, my home, my heaven, my home. Oh, pure land, sweet pure land. Oh, pure land, sweet pure land. My heaven, my home, my heaven, my home. So it's just one that I love to sing as I'm biking or as I'm planting. You know, so many people talk smack on the Midwest.
The plant on the side of the road is saying thank you.
Yeah, and I'm like, hey, thank you, plant. I am just reading now the Secret Teachings of Plants by Booner. Have you read that book?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. And just really appreciating that the love is mutual. And love is so reciprocal. And that, you know, this great people, you know, talk like, oh, I'm sorry you live in the Midwest. There's no mountains. There's no ocean. And I'm like, oh, no. You don't know where we are. Like, our roots run deep. And I am so excited to be in a time and with people that are appreciating the richness of our soil and honoring it in a sustainable way by learning to build yield for humans that also honors the diversity of Earth.
And people, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cemetery. I can imagine you at some time being in the cemetery alongside a grave that would be interesting. Perhaps three wives passed on because they were in a technological era when they died with childbirth and things like this. And there's history there. And the cemetery has just bought 6 acres, I think, and they put in a prairie. It's a reserve for the future. And so I imagine you walking around the cemetery with songs that you create yourself. And with perhaps a team of people, because sometimes this interaction is tremendous.
Ooh, let's do that. Let's have a sing in the cemetery. Whitney, who was just here, and I sang last week at a house concert, and we sang Sweet Honey in the Rocks song, Breath.
Uh-huh.
Listen more often to things than to beings. Listen more often to things than to beings. 'Tis the ancestor's breath when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's breath in the voice of the waters. Those who have died have never, never left. The dead are not under the earth. They are in the rustling trees. They are in the groaning wood. They are in the crying grass. They are in the moaning rocks. The dead are not under the earth. And it continues, but it shares about how
the dead
our ancestors
often
are
live. Like Teddy Roosevelt. I was just talking about Teddy Roosevelt. Gathered up places like in the West, and we're likely to lose them if we're not very careful. Mm. But millions of people visit those places and feel some of the things that you're talking about.
They're with us. They're helping us.
I grew up with my father, and we would go to bed with a song, now the day is over, night is drawing nigh, shadows of the evening steal across the sky. And it goes on, and my father was very much into environmental things, even though he almost didn't know it. But we had cows, and we had, and he was a school teacher. So, tell me how you interface with the local people. It seems that you have a body politic. You have a phone number. You release your information so that you can
play with this. We have a little prairie. You can't believe it. It was a gravel pit. Uh-huh. And the gravel pit, was 8 feet of glacial till was removed because it's good soil for roads. Mm-hmm. And the plants around the edge were native. Mm-hmm. The plants on the nearby interurban and the old mainline. These give a little extra space, mm-hmm. and you could almost tell in that remnant prairie what mm-hmm. was there. Mm-hmm. So we try to plant the gravel pit prairie. It's called a borrow pit because you take the stuff, but you never borrow it. You mm-hmm. never bring it back.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. so you can walk around on that, mm-hmm. and you have a different song than you had mm-hmm. in the cemetery. Yeah.
Can we come sing at the prairie with you?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. I have to go feed my belly because I'm hungry, but I really want to come meet these plants and sing with you on the prairies, and I'll learn more songs about plants. That's a dream that I have, is to learn to sing for and with plants, and then you can teach me.
We have some nice little prairies like Lake Park, very close.
Okay.
That has trails through it. You can fit in. You can find a place where you can get. Do you want to give your information so that...
oh, yes. People, if you want to come invite us to sing on your land, or if you want to come sing with us, let's let loose singing as a healing technology in the Midwest. It's really fun, and it's easy, and it's free, and you have a voice, and I have a voice. My name is Lindsay Scott, and my phone number is 217-898-3777.
Do you belong to a Scott family that has land at Elliott, which is
I
up
there? I don't, but I would love to meet more of my people. From what I know, none of my people settled here. So my people were coming mostly from, Air Force, so lots of not uh-huh. knowing. Yeah. And then Chicago, and before that, like Slovakia and Germany. And so I'm definitely in that question of where my people come from, but from what I know, nobody in my family has land near here.
We could take you to an old landfill which is repairing. It was on the top of the Bloomington Moraine looking over Randfield. And in its day, I would have Air Force students. We would take them up there, and they were not used to being in a landfill. And they weren't clad the right way. They would have short shorts. There were mosquitoes. And there were smells and things like that. So.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming, and okay, thank you. And William, do you want to say anything more? Support of this.
Yes, yes.
Yes, very much so, and thank you for
Song Circle.
Okay.
Song Circle.
Song Circle, okay. Yes. All right, thank you both for coming in. So we're back to Shirley and picking seed and getting hooked on prairie and its place in society. And so that's what is happening this morning. And that's how we bring people together. These little things that make it possible. There's an Oregon Street meet where people come together for a barbecue on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever they choose, during the summer months. And just the exchange there is interesting and informal and exciting. And one way or another, you go to a parade and people see you as a prairie person. I take a plant or two sometimes, and people begin to realize that they have a heritage in their prairie, which they know very little about. How do we do this? How do we look at a place like Allerton Park, which has our railroad bed running right beside it, and there are snakes and creatures that deserve to be preserved. We have to think about bicycle ways. We have to think about not having the bicycles on the prairie, but having a nature trail, which might only be 2 or 3 feet wide It might be one directional, so that people can allow the prairie to grow. So this week I've been thinking about the new library, which is very near to our some of our best prairie with purple gentian and other things on it. We wonder how to survive. And I'm very tempted to ask the village of, or the city of Monticello, the library has 10 acres of vacant ground next to it, which is bought. And wouldn't it be wonderful to have a little prairie there with a trail that would lead into the railroad? The university has been helpful. It has divided the Allerton Park into the more commercial side and also the farming side. But they've also put in a mile by 66 feet of reconstruction prairie so that they will encourage the creatures that are in our railroad bed, which is only about 100 feet wide. And there are bicycle trails potential nearby, but I think they could go on the old route 47, which is nearby and could be a shared road and not necessarily be an active bicycle way on a 4 miles of natural history. We've lost an elevator there, which was an icon for us. But over and over, we find these little patches still remaining. We have a wind prairie that goes from Paris to Decatur, but has been taken over by the Department of Natural Resources. But then there's a move afoot to take out that prairie because it was thought to be a trail potential. But it's also loaded with little pieces of prairie with undisturbed soil. If we go west towards Clinton from White Heath to Shady Rest to Lodge to DeLand to Weldon to Lane to Weldon Springs and then across a truss bridge and up the Hensley Moraine to Clinton. How do we preserve that corridor? It's costly to do. It means we have to have our hand out sometimes to get support. Sometimes it depends on state and federal people being involved because that's where there's a tax base. But it's not easy to do, folks. And it starts with little things like singing and dancing and understanding your prairie. And so what Shirley did with her book, it's I think 1996 or something like that. It's the University of Iowa Press. And she began to sketch all the little creatures that the plants mainly. And it's almost a very good identification book. So you can find your plant and it gives a lot of details that are useful for people. And they're encouraging for people who don't have an academic background in prairie restoration. I'm kind of impressed by Iowa because they've done a lot to preserve natural history. We have Ron Sleater locally who has a prairie at Clinton, Iowa, and that's just across the river from a railroad right-of-way prairie that has cactus on it. It's on the bottomlands and it's sandy and it's got material that was blown across the state by the winds that come from west to east, and the heavier material dropped out. So this is dry area environment where cactus can do quite well. And you'd be amazed if you go at the right time of the year, there's all these cactus blooming in yellow. And there are the cliffs nearby that were part of the embankment of the Mississippi River and the Illinois River. And If you go up on top of those hills that were actually fired fairly frequently, you'd be amazed at what you find. The compass plant might not be 10 feet tall, it might be 2 feet tall, but they're surrounded by a range of other species. So Shirley should be applauded for what she did, and also she brought in her family, was convinced by what she was doing. A font of energy in Iowa is somewhat academic. The University of Northern Iowa is headed by an administration that kind of appreciates what Prairie is about. So the University of Northern Iowa is planted to many plots of prairie in different locations with different soil types, different moisture content, and gradually over the years that has come to be a place where there's a lot of information that you can gather. There's a center for prairie restoration. There's a bunch of professorial people, namely Darrell Smith and Dave Williams, and they're joined by other people who are, they don't know all the answers. They are, first of all, very willing to say that they are just learning themselves, but they have guidelines for you so you don't have to invent the wheel if you're going to plant a prairie. That institution is now the archiving place for the details of the North American Prairie Conference and their agendas. And papers that are around that. So if you have a university that's interested in this sort of thing and it spins over to the horticultural plantings around the university and to a center and to the planting of plots of species that normally don't exist by themselves, but it's convenient to have them as pure species, because then you can spread them so that if you know that there's a sandy plant and this plant belongs there, you can do that. That's often better than you going in with a mixture of seed, which is the same for 10,000 acres, and then it takes 1,000 years for those plants to sort themselves out to the niches that they find. There's equipment. You need to know how to harvest seed. Perhaps it is that you put a furry coat on a dog and send it through the prairie so that they harvest seed, then you harvest the seed off the coat. You can find horse stables, and some of these plants augment themselves by going through the alimentary canal of a horse. So if you're looking for monada or bergamot, you might just go to a horse stable and find that the yard around it has a lot of monada or bee balm that has enjoyed being treated by a passage through an alimentary canal. Imagine a vole that has eaten something, but the seed is hard and it doesn't get digested. So it moves around. We also have to have birds, and birds have very few places to be. If you take the a survey that went from the north of Illinois to the south of Illinois in about 1900 and then was repeated by Graber and Graber, a couple who were looking for how much birds we have over a 50-year period. And the birds have dropped and dropped and dropped till almost the most frequent bird is an aluminum airplane in the air. We hear stories on the WILL sometimes, and it's sort of saying, isn't it wonderful what we have? But I have to say that it's not wonderful what we don't have. We need to be aware that we're rapidly getting rid of these small patches that are not contiguous with each other. So you can't get creatures moving along and across. So you need large areas like the Neil Smith Prairie in Prairie City, Iowa, or the Manhattan in Kansas, the Manhattan prairie that is there because it's on the Flint Hills, and the Flint Hills couldn't really be cultivated. So even your little patch of 10 by 10, I have a dentist who planted 10 by 10 foot spot of prairie with probably about 15 species in it, and there it was amongst his regular garden. And you have to be careful that if you plant the sunflowers, they're aggressive and they're going to take over. And you have to know not to grow cultivars like sweet clover that can be very good for bees, but they can also choke out a prairie. So even in a 10-foot by 10-foot piece, you can have a prairie. And in a rain garden, if you have water, you have the choice of letting the water run off. And most of our water in Champaign County has been last settled county because it was swampy. So then you create rivers and get the water off quickly. And so we have a farming community that would not exist if it didn't have that opportunity to have drainage. So drainage ditch is a big deal. And a little piece of prairie will survive along the levees where a drag line chain pulled the dirt out, created a river, and left a levee at the east side. And the pontoon gradually moved down the river and created a drainage district, 400 of them in Illinois. And then when you want to have the water absorbed and go into the aquifer, that's sort of what a rain garden is about. You're trying to let the water soak in. Then you have an argument with farmers who are not sure that they want to have the water sink in. They would rather it run off. Sometimes that water is tremendously important for the future. In California, where there's drought, and there's always drought in our climate, we have to know that. Sometimes it's a 5-year drought. In California, they've not only been taking out the water out of the Colorado River till it's almost non-existent or just a salty drain, they've also been taking water out of the aquifers, the historic aquifers that are not restoring. And in some places, the water has dropped to the point that the land on top of it has fallen down. And you can tell that because the pump houses that were concrete at the top of a deep pump house well remain up in the air when the land around it has fallen down. So we're using and abusing water that cannot be replaced quickly. But you can do a lot just to know what you have. And we need people to be out there to look after the invasive species, to know how to burn, to document the species that are there. So if you see a purple gentian, then you will be impressed. And we're looking for those sorts of people. We're glad that the College of NRIS Environmental and
it used to be the College of Agriculture, but there have Master Garden Aces, Agriculture Consumer Affairs. It's a name that I don't remember easily, but they've created a Master Gardener and then realized that a Master Gardener really didn't get you to Master Naturalist, so there's a Naturalist program. The park districts are doing things. But when you go to putting in a Kickapoo Trail, where we have up to about 100 feet of right-of-way, and we put in a trail that looks like a highway, and it takes out all the prairie. So in the matter of a year, we've lost a huge amount of our only native soil and native plants. And I hope that the next element of the Kickapoo Trail, 6 miles has already gone in, and then the next will be probably about 5 or 6 miles, but it'll be through areas that is prairie. And when you go to plan, you have to plan perhaps 8 years in advance. You have to be in there. You have to know who's planning what, where, now. And is this engineers who may not have a biology or sociology background? Is this a pure recreational trail? What do we do with the prairie on either side? We're down to 0.01%. Of original two-thirds prairie. It's all in monocrops. And we need this like crazy, but to see it taken over by a huge recreational trail is very difficult. So you have to hang in there and ask questions about where does the seed come from? Who's providing the seed? So if you're going to plant next year, who's ordering the seed? Who's collecting the seed? Where is it coming from? Is it collected in mass? Does it have a lot of native seed mixes? Have plants that don't belong here? So who's looking a year or two ahead? Who's working with the Paris Regional Division of for this area for the creation of the trail adjacent to a road, and the roads often need to be widened, and that takes out more soil and more natural history. How can we have this soil, if you need a ditch, to dig a ditch without having to manicure the whole prairie with a bulldozer that takes all the species out, takes all those roots with their adventitious buds out, and then remodels the area and come back. So it's so much cheaper to have a laser beam on a huge bulldozer and go into reconstruction. But reconstruction will take 10,000 years to come back to what you might want in the first place. But the species are gone, and you've disturbed the soil, and you sometimes have fertilized the soil. And the prairie doesn't need that fertilizer, and but it does need its native soil. So if you could sit on the side of the road with a high hoe and take out the 3 inches of soil that you need to take out, or the 2 feet of soil, the compost plants and the creatures underneath will remain there. But if you go sculpt that landscape and remodel it, it's soft, and you plant on the roadside sensibly to some extent, cultivar plants that grow quickly and can be mown, and then you go a little bit further back to the ditch, and then beyond the ditch, you have native plants. But if you cut them off with a backhoe and design it differently, you avoid that sculpted design. So then you need people who are on committees who will say to the engineers, this is going to cost you more to have a backhoe do it that way and not sculpt new material or disturb the soil and ruin the seed there. And what the problem is that sculpting, and that softness brings you weed seeds. So you immediately have those creatures in the prairie like ragweed or horsetail, as some people call it, to take over. You have equisetum, horsetail. You have a lot of weeds coming up, including trees like autumn olive. So I'm kind of disappointed that the photographs I took years ago showing the prairie near the Bayview Cemetery were replaced by trees, and then the trees have been removed and the sculpting has gone on, and it will be years and years before that can return to anything like a native prairie. So in doing this, we have to be very careful about reducing that 0.01% of the prairie that remains. I think we've got a few minutes. Mm-hmm. 3 minutes. So I didn't get to my books, but I'll be back. There are some very good guides, and the one that's from Iowa, Northern Iowa University, headed up by Darrell Smith, is Tallgrass Prairie, Guide to Prairie Restoration, and it comes from the center that they have there. And each chapter has a summary, so you don't have to work your way through it, but wow, it's nice. And then we have another Ecology of Prairies by a guy named Chris Hesler, and that gives you a lot of introduction to things like the biodiversity that we like to encourage before it is all eliminated. So these books have biographies, they have glossaries for terms, they have pictures of what you might look for in plant botany if you're not a botanist. They have summaries of when things flower and what can be used in a public relations situation where you would like to have some flowering for people who are moving at 30 miles an hour and can't stop to look at tiny little flowers. So you need either a bulk of thousands of these little flowers, or you need some bigger and better flowers. But you better not have too many helianthus or sunflowers, because they can take over. But I think this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and nobody else. And as always, we will have some additions to this program. If you go online, and it will only take about a week. Last week's episode was already yesterday, I saw, on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube about a week from now and go looking for The Prairie Monk, you can find an entire channel of 150 plus of these shows. And we've done what we can to enhance those videos so it's not just Dave, and in this case, the young lady, Ms. Scott, talking, just sitting at microphones. We'll have some additional maps and maybe other things like that. So, it's an easy way for you to then revisit the program. And if you ever miss an episode, you can always catch up in with one of the ones that you missed. Also, again, by going to youtube.com and typing in The Prairie Monk in their search window, and you will find the entire channel courtesy of Urbana Public Television. And now it is noon.
Lindsay Scott, her number.
Lindsay, that's right.
Is 898-3777, and she's in the Rantoul area, and she has a email of seehere@seehere.info.